Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in view, and the sun is eclipsed by the
Hello and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Mr. Ben, and hi, everyone.
As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And you can catch us as a podcast also, and before you will be able back soon be able to get us again live on dublincityfm.ie, but I believe it's available live on TuneIn.
Yep,
not a platform I'm familiar with myself.
I heard about it last week or the week before.
Yeah,
I said, how do you find your podcast? And then somebody was trying to listen in and found it on TuneIn. So that's I haven't ventured that far yet in technology.
Either way. There's no excuse.
No.
We're out there. And we'll crack on with it. Lots to get through, as usual. And as usual, we will start with what to see in the night sky.
Yes, indeedy. And tonight, 10:31 to 10:38, a good long pass the space station. Altitude, 65 degrees, so it's quite high. Comes in from the southwest and... Believe me not, at 10:31 it will appear. So get out a few moments earlier, and it's quite bright as well, at -3.8 in the brightness scale as well. The planet roundup is not in any way different than last week's. So it's
it's more or less the same.
It's more or less the same, sir. We have Mercury sinking down out of sight into the glow of sunset, and... so it's not really something to look at. Venus, -4.1. It's a good bright planet at the moment. It rises in the east-northeast horizon a half an hour before first glimmer of dawn. And then Venus climbs higher until dawn. Sky finally grows too bright when it just disappears as the sun comes up. So in a telescope, Venus's shrink globe is a new word as well. Now only about 16 arc seconds wide pole to pole, and has become gibbous at 65% sunlit. Mars, on the other hand, magnitude 1.5. It's in Leo, glows low in the west in late twilight and sets soon just after dark. Above it by a little more than a fist's arm's length at Denebola. There's a nice star to watch. Leo's tail tip at magnitude 2.1. Still, it's quite a hard one to see, Ben, Mars at the moment, where as a couple of months back it was beautifully in our vision.
Very prominent.
Yes, it was.
We'll just have to wait another few months till it's back in opposition.
Yeah.
Another 10 months or so, I'm not sure exactly.
About 10 months. Magnitude -1.9, Jupiter. It's beginning to emerge very low in the glow of sunrise. It finds it three fists or so lower to the left of Venus. Now, Venus is the one that's very, very bright. And Venus and Jupiter are closing in towards a striking dawn conjunction, just 0.9 degrees apart on August the 12th. So put that in the diary if you want to see the two of those pretty close together. Saturn, magnitude +0.9. You can still just about see it. It rises about midnight.
It's a difficult one, though.
It is, yeah. And it's appearing back in the evening skies, thing, which is great. But the best time to try a telescope on Saturn is just before dawn. So you get to see it either first thing in the morning before dawn or... around midnight, thereabouts. I did see it. I had, admittedly, now I did have a pair of binoculars with me, so and the other thing about that, Saturn rings are almost edge on this year, which in itself is quite a nice sight to see, because we always know it as, what, about 20, 23 degrees?
Yeah, it varies. And sometimes you can see the under, depending on the relative positions, whether you can see the underside of the rings or the top side of the rings.
And the amazing thing about those, they're only about 10 meters deep.
But thousands of miles wide.
millions. Quite a long way, yeah. Uranus, on the other hand, 5.8. You won't see that without a pair of binoculars, and it is low in the east just before dawn again. These planets are coming head-to-head now shortly. The moon, I think, is a good guideline. I must look into that in detail. Neptune, still a telescopic star at magnitude 7.9, lurks just above 1% above Saturn just before dawn begins. It's almost impossible to see that unless you have a really good telescope. So the one to watch for, I suppose, Saturn.
Venus in the morning.
Yeah, Venus, definitely. It's a really bright one at minus 4.1, so you won't miss that particular one. Mm-hmm. So that's all we have in the sky. They keep moving. That's the thing about these. They just keep moving. Confusing the...
Thank you, John. Oh, when you mentioned Saturn, and a good pointer for tonight, actually. It's 5 degrees to the lower left of the moon.
That's what I was looking for. I knew I had it here somewhere.
5 degrees, which is about half the width of your fist at arm's length. About three fingertips wide, something like that. But that brightish object to the lower left of the moon this evening, that is indeed Saturn. And just another pointer. Well, it's hard to miss Venus, but if you're up in the early hours of next Tuesday morning, Venus is that extremely bright object, nearly 8 degrees to the lower right of the moon, which is not quite the width of your fist at arm's length. And it is still... You might, if you're lucky, might still catch some noctilucent clouds. I haven't seen any myself this year, although I have been sent some photographs of and from around the country, and they have been, quite spectacular.
Yeah, I saw them about, it gets bright-ish around 3 a.m, sort of that time at present, and there were some lurking around up towards your house, actually. Yeah, and up your direction. So, and they're quite nice. I didn't have the camera with me at the time because the clouds came in pretty quickly on the top of them, but over them, just slightly lower. But they're a fine sight to see, these noctilucent clouds. So.
And just thank you to their texter for there's a little problem with the sound. I think I just have the amplitude up a bit too high. So I've just knocked it back. I think we're all right now. But you're going to let me know, and I'm looking at my little view meters, and it looks all right from here. But you're going to let me know. Speaking of the moon, we have a 73% waning gibbous moon, which is not currently above our horizon at present, but it will rise later tonight, 11:40 p.m. to be precise, from our vantage point here in Dublin, where it also will be due south at its highest as it crosses the meridian just at 5:45 tomorrow morning, and it will set just after midday tomorrow afternoon, and when it rises again 10 minutes before midnight tomorrow, it will be down to 62% waning gibbous phase as we head towards the third quarter moon, which will be on Friday the 18th in the early hours of the morning to be precise. But the sun, here we go, John, guess what? Sunrise is tomorrow in Dublin, 5:17 a.m, 8 minutes later than a week ago. Well, I don't notice it too much in the morning by myself because I'm still in the land of Nod at that time. And a local noon when the sun is at its highest and crosses the meridian, that's at 1:31 p.m. and sunset tomorrow, 9:43 p.m, 8 minutes earlier than a week ago. And then we'll have various shades of twilight until, well, we'll have nautical twilight ends about an hour before midnight, and then we'll have astronomical twilight for the rest of the night until just after 3 a.m. No astronomical night until July the 30th, so still not a great time of the year if you want to view anything that's not exceptionally bright, like a planet or the moon. But what does that mean? It means tomorrow we'll have 16 minutes less daylight than a week ago, another 2 minutes, 20 seconds off daylight time tomorrow, and there'll be 16 hours and 28 minutes between sunrise and sunset.
Yeah, as you well know, I like to mooch around in the early hours of the morning, looking for stuff, I think.
Stuff to eat, and drink.
Stuff to eat, maybe. And then we'd take a little look out, and if it's a pretty clear sky, we'd go out for a little wander, and it could be an hour. Doing that. The last couple of weeks I saw the procession of the Starlink satellites, just totally by accident. I didn't know they were there. And one big monster of a comety type thing came flying through the sky, burning through our little atmosphere, and then a lot of satellites everywhere. That's one of the big things. As your eyes get more acclimatized to the darkness, I suppose, you want to make it sure you're up sort of 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock because it's starting to get bright, although it's getting later to get brighter now, which is a good thing for us as well. Uranus, seemingly, is surprisingly warm. It's heating up in the case for a new planetary mission. So NASA and anybody else think it strengthens the case for a mission to Uranus, of course. And scientists have found it's emitting its own internal heat even more than it receives from sunlight. Now, it is a fair bit out, so it's not going to get very much heat from the sun. And the discovery contradicts observations of the distant gas giant made by the NASA Voyager 2 probe nearly four decades ago. And it doesn't give us the heat range, but it'll be definitely in the minuses. And scientists led by the Xingyu Yang of the University of Houston analyzed decades of readings from the spacecraft and computer models. It's amazing how long it takes them to get the information through to us. It could take decades before they emit. Well, I suppose emit. Yeah, that's a good one. So they reckon it emits 12.5% more internal heat than the amount of heat it receives from the sun. Again, it's in the minus figures. Well, well in the minus figures. So I'd like to keep a little eye on that one as well, just to see if we can come up with a temperature range. That's the other thing as well. You have 0 is freezing, okay, 0 degrees centigrade, and 100 is boiling.
Yeah.
How do they get the things to know exactly where to boil and where to freeze?
You're all right.
It's the total confusion.
Well, they were picked, let's call zero,
yeah.
On something standard like water. It freezes at this temperature, boils at that temperature. Yeah. We'll call that 0, we'll call that 100.
So accurate. It's 0 for freezing and the Fahrenheit scale. Now, that's completely and utterly different. That's just...
I don't know what that was based on altogether.
Minus 32, multiplied by this and minus that. And
plus I think 8. It was... I'm not sure about this now. I know we're going off piece completely here. But it was... Somebody decided this coldest temperature, one of these scientists way back when, the coldest temperature they could achieve. And they called that 0.
Yeah.
But I don't know where they... And then... Yes, how they decided what was going to be plus 1 and plus 2 degrees above that, I don't know.
One of those things that make you scratch your head and stay awake all night.
Well, here's something.
They reckon that they could never get down to 0 degrees Kelvin because it's just there's a couple of molecules floating around just to heat the place up a bit.
In theory, that would mean that all that, there's always energy and... I suppose being released, not quite released by molecules. It's the energy that holds protons and electrons together. And those are the vibrations. The vibrations would have to go to 0 for, that's when.
For absolute 0.
I think they got into within a couple of hundredths of a degree Kelvin, but whether it's possible or not, or maybe if you did the whole universe, it just poof, disappear. I don't know.
it's hard to know, but it's just some of these little things you pick up. And yeah, reading and Googling and doing all sorts of things like that as well.
Anyway, we shall move on. And we talk a lot about life on Mars, but, and of course we haven't proved that there may have been and there may still be, but what about life on Venus? Which seems totally implausible because of the high pressures and temperatures that are involved on the planet Venus. But there are signals of certain chemicals that have been detected in the atmosphere of Venus, which could, well, on Earth, they're only known to be produced by organic living materials. There is going to be a UK-backed mission to Venus. Because, and it's something we covered here at least a year or two ago, where researchers have detected the presence of two potential biomarkers. They're the gases phosphine and ammonia. which, as I indicated, on Earth they only can only be produced by biological activity and also by industrial processes as well, of course. But their existence in the clouds of Venus cannot be very easily explained by known atmospheric or geological phenomena. So Cardiff University and co, they're plotting a way to get to the bottom of it. So they revealed a new mission concept, and they plan to search and map phosphine, ammonia and other gases rich in hydrogen that shouldn't be on Venus. So they're building a little CubeSat, and they've only a tiny budget of 50 million euro, and they're going to hitch a ride on the European Space Agency's mission to Venus, which is called Envision. Now, that's not scheduled for launch until the year 2031. And their little CubeSat, they're going to call it VERVE, for the, not after the band now, but the Venus Explorer for Reduced Vapors in the Environment. But maybe they are VERVE fans, the person who came up with that one. But that's going to detach from the main craft when it arrives at Venus and carry out an independent survey while this Envision probes the planet's atmosphere and the surface and the interior. So they're going to see if they can find more evidence of ammonia on Venus, and perhaps other. They think that there may be not so much on the on the surface. The surface would be too hot for life as we know it, Jim. But because of the turbulence and the circulation of heat on the planet, there could be, and I'm sure there are, parts within the cloud. As you know, Venus has a thick atmosphere, and that within that, there could be areas where the temperature would be suitable for life as we know it.
Yeah, now, you mentioned it's quite hot on the surface, 450 degrees centigrade to be exact, and about 50 kilometers up, it can range from 30 to 70 with an atmospheric pressure similar to Earth here as well. So that's where they want to take the measurements and things like that, because it's not going to last an awful lot longer through as it gets through the pressure and then landing and then burning up under these as well. But they reckon they could get extremophiles, microorganisms, as we know they down at the bottom of the sea, they come up through volcanic.
They live off there, or well, through hot volcanic vents is where they get their energy from, because this is where they are living. There's no sunlight, so they have to get their energy from somewhere and something, and they seem, and of course at the bottom of the sea the pressures are huge as well.
Yeah, and it's cold either side of that, and then they come along and go hot.
There's a tiny fraction of an area around the vent that's habitable for these creatures, as you mentioned, and they go an inch or two one way or an inch or two the other. They freeze or boil to death.
Move over.
You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. And you can also catch us as a podcast, and hopefully back shortly, soon, live on the new revamped website, which I know they're working on very hard. I know it's behind schedule, but they're doing the best, and they will have it as soon as they can, and it'll be back at dublincityfm.ie.
Now, there's a newly discovered interstellar object, which may be the oldest comet ever seen. It's a mystery. It's a mystery interstellar object discovered last week, and it's likely to be the oldest comet ever seen, possibly predating our solar system by more than 3 billion years. Now, that's more than a year or two. It's a water-rich visitor named 3I/Atlas, and it's the third known object from beyond the solar system ever spotted in our cosmic neighborhood. Now, non-interstellar comets such as Halley's Comet formed in the solar system, so about 4.5 billion years at the moment. And this particular one was spotted on July the 1st, which is just a couple of weeks back, by the Atlas Survey Telescope in Chile, and it was about 670 million kilometers from the sun. So they're going to keep an eye on this particular one as well. There's other ones as well called Uma.
Oumuamua.
I think you need a different language for this. Oumuamua, yeah, spotted in 2017. And an easier to pronounce, which was Borisov in 2019. So we have 3I or 3L Atlas, which appears to be travelling on a steep path through the galaxy at the moment with a trajectory that suggests it originated from the Milky Way's thick disk. So it's always nice to see newly discovered stuff coming up, and this is from the new telescope.
I think it's called 3I. They call it 3I for short.
Yeah.
Because it's the third interstellar object.
Maybe they should make it clearer and put the things over there.
But it's going to leave the, it's not going to be captured by the sun's gravity. It's the angle it's coming in at, and the speed at which it's travelling is too fast. It, now the sun's gravitational forces will perturb the orbit, or not the orbit, because it's not in orbit, but will deflect the path a little bit, but it's just going so fast. It'll just go out the other side of the solar system, and I believe it's going to be at its closest point to the sun at the end of October, and will take a couple of years then to leave the solar system and head off back into interstellar space, off to other, perhaps, habitable solar systems.
Exactly.
Which brings us nicely to
clean up in the.
I was going to say
in the orbital area just above our. But if you have,
oh yes, no. I was thinking about giving our presence away to aliens.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's and the airport job.
The airports. Yeah. The airports could be our downfall.
Yeah,
because apparently it's the radar systems used in airports, not just civilian airports, and particularly military airports. They could be inadvertently revealing our existence to potential advanced, of course, alien civilizations out there within 200 light years or so. That's, of course, if these civilizations have state-of-the-art radio telescopes of their own. And theoretically, that's how far we should be able to look to spot aliens who have evolved to use a similar level of technology. So if there's our other civilized technologies out there within 200 light years, and they're using the same type of radar systems that we use in here on Earth, we could spot them. Now, this is apparently as a result of some work done by the Royal Astronomical Society's National, it was mentioned at the Royal Astronomical Society's National Astronomy Meetings, which is on in Durham, or was in Durham, and they say that the big, particularly the big airports like Heathrow, Gatwick, New York's JFK, etc., etc., could reveal our existence. And as you know, of course, these radar systems, they sweep the sky for aircraft. They send out a combined radio signal. They calculated, these people who study this, of 2 by 10 to the 15 watts, which is a huge amount of power. And they said that's enough to be picked up 200 light years away by telescopes. Telescopes that are comparable to, I don't know whether you know this one, the Green Bank telescope in West Virginia. Anyway, it's a big radio telescope. They said, to put that into context, the nearest potential habitable world beyond our solar system is Proxima Centauri B. That's 4 light years away. And of course, that would still take a spacecraft using current technology thousands of years to get there. And they say, in particular, the military radar systems, they're more focused and directional, and they create a unique pattern. They say like a lighthouse beam sweeping the sky, and they would even put out more power, and they could even be detected even further away. So there's a lot more to that story, but perhaps we move on to the next one. Otherwise, other than
the radar system, seemingly you mentioned 2 to the 10 to the power of 15 watts. Now, they those particular waves don't need a medium like air or anything like that to transmit through our skies, the universe, everything else, so they go quite a long way and don't need an awful lot to drive them, I suppose, but they do send out a good punch into the air here on Earth so that it gets through the medium of our, I suppose, atmosphere and is able to recognize aircraft by the pinging, and that's whatever the bounce back is with the stuff that they have involved.
This is a particular wavelength of the electromagnetic spectrum, and pings absorb, no, well, not absorb, they can be deflected or reflected off aircraft, and then the signal bounces by. It is an electromagnetic type of radiation, traveling, as you indicate, at the speed of light, so it can go, goes through space, goes through, well, not anything. It depends on the, on what it is as to what will be, what it will absorb and what won't absorb it. Like X-rays, which are a particular wavelength, and of course, when you can, when you pass X-rays through the body, it'll be absorbed by certain tissues and not by the bone. That's where you see the bones.
It brings us back in into time, as we can see back into time, because the wavelengths are different. They're still trying to catch up with where we are at the moment. So we had the Big Bang, everything formed, the soupy, muddy stuff, and all the universe. And then years and years later, we are still picking up on the old, old signals, I suppose, from the Big Bang as well. So that's interesting. Orbital clean-up missions. Keeps coming up week by week. The UK Space Agency.
One of your favourite subjects, space junk.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And I was watching a programme, I think it was on one of the Netflix programmes the other day, and questions were asked about why a lot of junk up there and stuff doesn't hit each other, because space is large. But it doesn't, it still doesn't make sense that there's, because we're really dealing with low Earth orbit here. And although the vastness of space is there, there should be bits and pieces hitting each other more often. So they just, every now and again, punch the ISS, the International Space Station, to get out of a bit of junk that might be coming their way. So it's, there is a danger up there all the time. Mm-hmm. So they're opening a competitive bid. This is the UK now, for £75 million, which is about €87 million in our language. And they seem to have pioneered a mission to remove the derelict satellites from orbit. So a lot of these will come back naturally as well, but there's still hundreds of thousands of bits and pieces up there in space. So it's a big, big problem, I think. We've been watching this for the last 20-odd years, and it's just been getting bigger and bigger. And the only map, anything that's over 10 centimetres, really, anything lower than that.
They're tracking 54,000 bits of junk debris. That's, as you mentioned, over 10 centimetres long. And, of course, millions. There must be millions and millions of ones that are small. If you talk about microscopic, or almost microscopic.
Of paint, even, that type of thing. Yeah, it's little bits, but they can't. They just can't keep an eye on those, because they're just too small. Seemingly, China has launched a new spacesuit and other supplies off to the Chang'an space station. Seemingly, 7.2 tons of supplies and bits and pieces and things went up to the their own space station on July the 15th. China's standard time was 5:34 a.m. our time, which is 5:34. So there's probably nearly, is there nearly 12 hours in the difference between us and China? There would.
They're about eight hours ahead. Yeah. Well, it depends what part of China, west or east, but I think so the east coast is 8 hours ahead.
The Tianzhou 9 is hauling 7.2 tons of cargo to the Chang'an station, which is currently occupied by three other astronauts, or taikonauts, as their correct name is, as China calls them, to the Shenzhou 20 mission. There's only three up in their station. I think there's still 11 in ours.
There's nine or 11, not sure. More than seven. Usually there's seven, but I think at the moment there is nine or 11, indeed. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have this evening. Thank you for listening, and thanks to John for his news items. Don't forget, you can write to us anytime. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM, where it's music all the way now until 2 a.m. because up next we have Dublin's Greatest Hits. And then from 10 p.m. to midnight, we have Nigel Wood with his World Music Mix in a program called Ear to the Globe. And then from midnight to 2 a.m., Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul in a with a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time, 7:30 p.m. next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from all corners and dimensions of the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening, and say good night, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John. And all that is now,
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.